Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange Open Mic Session. Today's topic is Performance in WebSphere Message Broker. My name is Joseph Lam, and this session will give you the opportunity to speak to our panel of experts on a variety of subjects related to today's topic. Moving on to slide number 2. In today's Open Mic Session, we will start off by introducing to you our panel of experts for the day. We will then move on to give you a brief introduction to performance in WebSphere Message Broker. Next, our panel of experts will answer questions that were pre-submitted to us via email. Then, we will open the lines for a live Q&A period. And finally, the session will end with a summary of the Open Mic Session given by our panel of experts. Moving on to slide number 3. At this time, I would like to introduce you to our panel of experts for today's call. Our panel consists of Ian Herthworth, WebSphere Message Broker Performance Specialist.
Hello, my name is Ian Herthworth. I work as a performance specialist in the WebSphere Message Broker Performance Team in Horsley in the United Kingdom. I work with the development team on new releases of WebSphere Message Broker and with customers to provide consultancy on Message Broker design, configuration, and tuning.
Next, we have Rich Piccino, WebSphere Message Broker Performance Specialist.
Hello, everybody. My name is Rich Piccino, and I also work in Horsley in the Message Broker Performance Team. And as Ian said, we work with development to improve performance of the product, and also we consult with our customers to help them tune and get the best out of WebSphere Message Broker.
Then we have Ralph Nanduri, WebSphere Message Broker Level 2 Support Specialist.
Hi, this is Ralph Nanduri. I'm from WebSphere Message Broker Level 2 Support at Raleigh Durham. I handle the day-to-day issues with the customers when they open the PMRs, and I will coordinate with development and performance teams involved along with the Level 3 support team.
And finally, we have Eric Kirk, WebSphere Message Broker Level 2 Support Specialist.
Hello, everyone. My name is Eric Kirk. I'm also a WebSphere Message Broker Level 2 Support Specialist. I often help customers with issues regarding memory allocation failures in their production environments and kind of help them test their message flows and establish what those memory requirements are.
Thank you, Eric. Now, before we get to the question and answer period, Ian, one of our panelists for today, would like to give you a technical overview of the topic. So I will now move on to slide number 4, and please go ahead, Ian.
Welcome to the Message Broker Performance Session. The purpose of this session is to provide performance guidance, highlight design considerations and processing costs, to touch on some common problems, to identify some performance-related tools, and to reference release performance improvements. Moving to the next slide. There's a wealth of information on Message Broker performance out there in the form of developer works articles, performance reports, support packs, and various tools. Our aim is to highlight these and provide links in the presentation notes to these resources today. Moving on to question number 1 on the next foil.
So the first question we have today is, how do I performance test my message flows? So to help me answer this question, there's a couple of slides that I've pre-prepared. If we could move to the next slide, 7, please. So the first thing to think about how you measure the performance of your flows is to decide how you're going to drive those flows, how are you going to push workload through it. So the first tip that I give people, and this really focuses on the MQ transport, is do not preload your queues. There are two reasons why you shouldn't just preload your queues. Firstly, it's unrealistic. So typically we see some people will take hundreds of thousands of messages and just preload an MQ queue and then start a broker flow. Typically in production, that's not how most customer systems will work. Typically messages are fed through in a more of a steady stream. So it's unrealistic to do it that way. And secondly, it's also inefficient. So MQ has in-memory buffers, And once you have over a certain threshold of messages on a queue, it'll spill over those buffers, and your performance will then be limited to the speed of disks rather than memory. So there are two good reasons why you shouldn't preload your queues. So if you can't just preload your queues, how should you drive your message flows? So in the Message Broker Performance team, we use a tool called the Performance Harness for JMS. This is a tool that we've written and we own ourselves. Not only do my team use this tool, the Web4MQ team also use this tool, and it's this tool that we use to produce all of the WebSphere Message Broker performance reports that you hear about today and the sizing information as well. So you can download this tool from AlphaWorks, and your URL is listed on the slide in front of you. So despite the name, the tool just doesn't only support JMS. You can use it to drive workload over, obviously, the JMS transport, but also MQ, HTTP, and SOAP. There are multiple functions to the tool, including throttled operation, so you can tell it to run as fast as it can to drive workload through the flow, or maybe at a fixed rate. You can drive one or more queues, and you get feedback from the tool in real time in the scope of messages per second. And if you are using JMS, you can use whichever JNDI provider you wish to use, or for MQ and message broker as JMS providers, you can actually not use JNDI at all. So if we could go to slide 8, please. So a few more details on the performance harness. This is referring to the most commonly used module of the tool. Most people tend to have their flows with using MQ. So there's some examples of the modules that we have in Perp Harness. We have an MQ Java sender module, which will allow you just to put messages to queues. Or we have a receiver module, which will allow you just to get messages from a queue. That will just drain a queue and quote a message rate. One which we use most is the MQ Java.requester module. So this module will put to a queue, and then the same thread will get to a queue. So it operates in the request response scenario. And there's an example how you would launch the tool here. As you can see, Perf Harness is just a standard command line Java tool. So you'd run it with the Java command, followed by the class name, which is JMS Perf Harness. You tell it the module that you would wish to use. In this instance, we're using the requester module, which means the thread is going to put to a particular queue. In this case, the input queue, -iq is input queue. And then we're going to get from a response queue, which is specified by -oq. We're going to run the tool for 120 seconds. And the queue manager hosting these queues is called QMRed on server name server 1. And there's an MQ listener running on this queue manager, which is on port 1414. We've chosen to send in file contents from input message xml.msg. And then something that I wanted to point out about this tool is that it also has the capacity to send pre-canned messages that you've used with RFHUtil. I'm sure many of you who use MQ are familiar with RFHUtil, where you can specify an RFH header and save off that message to a file. So that file is supported by JMS Perf Harness, so you can resend that message, including the RFH header, by specifying the -RF2 flag. -SS means we're going to print statistics out every 5 seconds. -NT means we will create 5 client threads to send our messages. And finally, -PP and -TX means we're going to send persistent messages in a transaction. That just gives you an example of how you might run this tool. I'll just mention the other module which we have for driving MQ transports, which is a responder, particularly useful for MQ customers, which will do a get and then a put on your queue manager. I won't go through all the other modules today. They're on AlphaWorks if you want to see those. But just to highlight that for the other transports which are supported, similar modules are also available. We could go to the next slide, number 9. A few more details on the tool. I mentioned it's a Java tool, so you need to use Java 5 to run it. It's compiled against MQ version 7 Java libraries, but it should still function in most version 6 scenarios. If you get version 1.0 of the tool, that will certainly work. We tend to set min and max heap sizes for the tool when we run it, just because it's a performance driver, and ideally you want to pre-allocate the memory you need to run the tool up front, so you're not paying the cost of extending that throughout the run. I've just shown you the class path, just to show you what jars you may need when you're running the tool, and then we have some example output. So when you run the tool, and this is the same for all the different modules, it will show you, as each thread started, you'll get a start statement, and then every interval which is specified by the SS flag, you'll get a line printed out. And in this case, you can see rate R equals, and then a message rate, and that's the rate in messages per second, followed by the number of threads being used to drive that message rate. When the tool finishes, you get a summary, total iterations, that's the number of messages that have been sent and received, how long the runs lasted on average, and what the maximum rate was that has been achieved during that test run. This gives you an idea of a tool that you can use to drive workloads for your flow. So that will give you how fast will your message flow run on your system. But while you're doing that, you should also use operating system tools like VMstat on Unix or TOP for Linux, or maybe if on Windows you would use Perfmon. On ZOS you would use the SDSF panels to look at things like CPU, memory usage, and I.O. to the disks. So you need to be aware of all these things as you're running the test. That concludes question number one. I'll hand over to Ian for question two.
Question number two. How do I identify which message flows and nodes are expensive? Moving on to slide number 11. The way to do this, or our recommended approach to work out which message flows and nodes are expensive, is to use SupportPack IS02. This provides a Message Broker Explorer plugin and provides function in two key areas. The administration of brokers with an MQ Explorer perspective, and secondly, real-time display of flow performance through the charting of message broker accounting and statistics data. Moving on to slide number 12. So, if we're trying to determine where the performance expense is, then we'd start at the broker level and work our way down through the execution groups, the message flows, and then down to individual processing nodes. The output from ISO2 will show us where to focus your efforts, which execution groups, which message flows, and then which processing nodes. For CPU bound flows, we typically focus on total CPU time. For I/O bound flows, we typically look at total elapsed time. The overhead of running ISO 2 is possibly in the region of around 10%. We probably wouldn't recommend running this in a production environment, but it's definitely worthwhile using in a development system test environment to work out which of your flows are the most expensive. Moving on to slide number 13. The accounting and stats data has been around since Message Broker version 5. However, this data wasn't that consumable. ISO 2 makes the enabling of stats easier and the data more consumable. The slide that you're looking at the moment shows Message Broker within the Explorer and how we can easily enable the statistics, the gathering of statistics data. You can select the execution group, or you can select a message flow, or you can select one of the nodes and then select statistics and start collecting statistics. Moving on to slide number 14. This shows the output that we would see from ISO 2. In the left-hand panel, you can see the queue managers and you can see the brokers. And in this particular example, the screenshots, we've enabled stats on the default execution group. This execution group has 5 flows deployed to it. In the bottom right-hand panel, we've selected the 3 most expensive flows to be graphed. On the top right, there is a filter option which we can use to select the metrics which we'd like to see graphed. All the metrics are available in the bottom-hand panel. So our recommendation is to customers who have multiple execution groups with multiple flows deployed to those execution groups, and they're wanting to understand where to start looking in terms of where performance is being consumed, to use ISO 2, break it down per execution group, then down into the message flows, and then, if possible, identify a specific node. That concludes the reply for this question.
So if we could take it to the next 15. Okay, so question three is, how do I determine the number of message flows per execution group, and execution groups per broker to deploy? Firstly, this is an excellent question to ask, and I wish I had a simple answer, but unfortunately, like many performance-related questions, it depends on a variety of factors, and I've got a couple of slides just to highlight what those factors are and to hopefully give you some tips. So if we could proceed to slide 16. Okay, so before I delve too much into this, I'd just like to highlight a support pack for you all. It's IP04. You can download it from the standard support pack pages for MQ and Message Broker. And this is Designing for Performance, written by a colleague of ours who also works in the performance team, Tim Dunn. And Designing for Performance covers explanations around what are the most expensive costs within Message Broker, and also some hints and tips on how to reduce those costs. And there's also some discussion around exactly this question in terms of how many instances should you be running, how many execution groups should you be running, and that's what we're going to touch on here. So before we get too much into this, I think it's important to actually explain when you're adding execution groups and when you're adding flows, what does that actually mean? So if we take a step back and think about what a flow, what a message flow is, or an instance of a message flow actually is, well, a message flow or an instance that you add on a flow is actually a thread. So it's an operating system thread which runs inside the execution group process. As such, it's got quite a low memory requirement as you add more flows or more threads. You have thread-level separation between the flows. And this means, of course, if one thread goes awry, it potentially could upset other threads which are running. But the benefit here is that you could, if you want to share information between these threads, use shared variables, if you're familiar with those. Now, in terms of an execution group, what is that? Well, an execution group is actually an operating system process or an address space on ZOS. And as it's a high-level process, obviously this has a higher memory requirement. And something which not everyone's aware of is that actually inside of an execution group we embed a JVM. So for every execution group, there's around 100 to 150 megabytes of memory overhead per execution group as you add them. What is nice about execution groups is it gives you quite a nice level of isolation for flows. So quite a lot of people like to have the particular applications a dedicated execution group for those applications. And it means it's quite operationally simple just to add these execution groups. That gives you some idea about what they are and some of the overheads associated as you add these different components. So what about some tips? Well, as I mentioned, some customers like to have a groupings of their flows for particular applications and have a dedicated execution group for those applications. And this can be quite a good idea, but you should be careful not to take this to extremes. So I've seen some customers who began with this approach, and they've continued this approach as they've got more and more applications integrating through Broker. Now, fortunately, over time, this can lead to cases where you've got dozens or even hundreds of execution groups. And if I refer back to the overhead incurred in terms of memory per execution group, this can actually cause quite some headaches for people. I'll talk about instances in a moment, so you should spread all the instances that you need for your message flows and the number of flows over the execution groups which you're going to use. And quite a good tip is if you know you're going to have applications which you're going to be sending very large messages are going to cause quite a high memory growth, then you should isolate those message flows to a particular execution group rather than spreading instances of those flows over many execution groups. The reason here is then only that one execution group will grow to the large size required to process those larger messages. And another tip, if you do have a large number of flows and execution groups, it can impact some of the admin operations. So things like deployment, connect times, and obviously just the overall manageability and administration of your broker can be harder if you've got a lot more of these components. Ultimately, you need to think about resource use in terms of memory that I've mentioned, how you're going to manage, administer your broker, and availability. Think about how you want to isolate your flows, if you need to isolate your flows. So if you just go to slide 17, please. So tightly coupled with how many execution groups and how many flows should I run is how many instances of a particular message flow should I use. So there are three rules or tips that we give people, and firstly there's no preset magic number, unfortunately. It depends very much on your flow and what it's doing. Flows are like people, they're different and sensitive to different things, so you need to work out what those things are. And the way you do that is, referring back to my earlier answer in question one, is you need to run it for real to find out what's needed and how your flow behaves. You need to think about what kind of message rate do you need for your application, what rate will one instance of the message flow sustain. So you should get your flow set up, start off with one instance, run the flow using perf harness, check out what the rate is you can achieve with that, and based on that, if it suits your requirements, then fine. If you need a higher throughput and you've got CPU and other resources available, then you should start incrementally adding instances and measure it again until you get to where you need to be. As you're doing that, you can work out how your message flow scales. So are you CPU bound or are you IO bound? Generally, flows which you use persistent messaging or will access the disk in some way will require more instances than flows which are CPU bound. You also need to think about things like contention. So if you have too many threads, maybe you'll get some kind of contention on database locks or access to queues. If you do have flows which are going to be operating together, so for example aggregation flows, then it's quite important that you look at those flows as individual parts and tune each of those separately. Very often we find customers will just allocate a pre-thought-out number of 10 or even 50 that they thought was a good number without actually testing that. You need to be very careful about thinking about just pre-allocating such a number without actually physically testing your flows. If you look at the message broker performance reports, which will be referred to later, they give some clue about how we scale with added instances and added execution groups. That should give you some things to think about and answer this question. And as I mentioned earlier, you should refer to IP04, Designing for Performance, for more information. That concludes the answer for this question. We could go to the next slide, 18, please.
Question number four. Where can I find out about the processing costs of different parsers? Moving on to slide number 19. The Message Broker Performance Team produce performance data and reports for each major release. These reports contain a wealth of information, including the processing costs of the different parsers. Performance reports are broken down into two main sections. These two sections meet different requirements. Section 1 contains the release highlights and some background information to help understand the context of the results. It shows the areas of improvements for version 6.1. It also shows the level of message throughput that is achievable when using Message Broker with different transformation technologies. Section 2 contains measurement data for a wide variety of tests. These examine the processing costs of individual functions using a single copy of the message flow. This information is provided for those who wish to understand the processing costs of different components within Message Broker, such as the differences in CPU costs between fixed length tagged delimited strings and all elements tagged delimited strings. This information is intended for the more experienced WebSphere Message Broker user who is familiar with the product, concepts and functions. As these tests run as a single copy of the message flow, they do not utilize the whole of the server machine and do not therefore represent the maximum message throughput that is achievable. Moving on to slide number 20. This slide contains information about where the performance reports can be downloaded from and the platform coverage for version 6.1. There is a performance report per platform. So in answer to the question, where can I find out about the processing costs of different parsers? Our answer to that would be to refer you to the performance reports for your particular machine and then have a look at the different parsing costs in section 2. Concludes the answer to this question. Moving on to slide number 21.
The next question is, how do I use IPCAM to monitor the message broker? Slide number 22, please. IBM Tivoli Composite Application Manager for SOA, IPCAM, uses user exits of the WebSphere message broker and collects the data for performance assessment. You can monitor, trace, and audit messages inexpensively while traversing via different node points before the end of the unit of work. Using the user-developed C or C++ based code by calling at different exit points and extracts the information about the message. The information that can be extracted ranging from the message tree, bitstream, environment tree, exception list, you'd be able to invoke the MQSI utility functions as well. The user exit APIs have been updated in version 6.1 to add new methods to tag the messages with their identifiers. The IT CAM for SOA provides support for data collection in message brokers from version 6.05 onwards, or in version 6.1, it is supported from 6.02 or later versions. You can obtain additional information from the Information Center of ITCAM SOA or Support Center. Next slide, please. Here, the ITCAM SOA is required to be installed in an environment that is already containing IBM Tivoli monitoring components, like the Tivoli Enterprise Monitoring Server, the Tivoli Enterprise Portal Server. The monitoring agents, data collectors, and the Tivoli Enterprise Portal Desktop have to be installed on the broker-containing machine. Application support have to be installed on all the monitoring infrastructure components identified by the red box in the middle picture, like monitoring server and portal servers. And this application support installation is packaged in the product ID CZ1ZHEN for ITCAM SOA 711. The application support allows the processing and display of the matrix returned by the monitoring agents. The installation can be verified by opening the Manage Tivoli Enterprise Monitoring Services window. And you can see the new ITCAM SOA agent there. After making sure the monitoring agent is successfully installed, one can configure for data collectors for the message broker. Slide number 24, please. The data collector configuration tool can be invoked using config-dc command present in the bin directory of the monitoring agents. You would be prompted to enter the message broker, execution group, and the message flow names. So the data collectors are basically at the message flow level. Once this step is completed, we can notice to have two new folders. A new folder gets created with the name WMB61 or WMB, depending upon the broker version. This WMB or WMB61 folder contains two subfolders, namely config and lib. The lib folder contains the user exit file with LEL extension in the form of MQSI SOA user exit underscore web 60 or 61, depending upon the version, underscore 32 or 64 bit dot LEL. Also, we notice the new environment variables MQSI user exit path or MQSI user exit underscore path 64 pointing to the new directory that holds the user exit LEL files. To view the performance characteristics of the flow, one has to log in the portal server using the browser or desktop clients. As you can see, the high-level overview of the service management agent in the upper right-hand side corner snapshot. The message broker data collector is enabled and running. You can find it. And you can browse the workspaces and verify the data being reported. An example of the graphics for response time, number of messages, and message sizes for requests is shown in the lower right-hand side corner. If you have any additional questions on this product or the other Tivoli product, OmegaMon, you can ask me. I'll address them once the presentation is over. Next slide, please. Question number six.
Okay, question six. How can you establish the memory requirements of your message flow and whether or not your message flow has a memory leak? The next slide, please. First thing that what you're going to be doing here is you're going to be conducting a controlled test on this message flow. So before you can conduct this controlled test, you want to gather some set of messages or some batch of messages where those messages represent the size and complexity of the type of messages you're going to expect in production. In addition, during the course of processing that batch of messages, you want to ensure that they actually execute all the paths of that message flow to ensure all the objects are loaded. So what you would be doing is testing the logic of that message flow, which you you would have to do anyway. So let's consider in this diagram, we've got an execution group that you have out there existing on the broker. What you would do first to that execution group is you want to get rid of everything on that execution group besides, and then of course deploy your message flow that you want to test. You'll do that with move deploy children. The next thing that you want to do is since the process heat for a process will only grow in time or remain the same, you want to restart that process, the execution group process, so you can obtain the minimal heat. You can do that by restarting the broker, or you can just issue the MQSI reload command against that execution group and start only that execution group process. Next thing you want to do is, well, you've restarted that process, is you want to begin monitoring that execution group with respect to memory. And you typically want to do that with some kind of script that'll record it to a file or use whatever your favorite tool is for monitoring memory. Next thing you want to do is deploy. You want to deploy your message flow to that execution group. So now you have a freshly restarted execution group. You have the minimal heat. You deploy your message flow to it, and you're ready to run your batches of messages. Now, next thing you want to do is automate the process of submitting those batch of messages. That's the batch of messages that will go through and execute each path of that message flow. And again, they're going to be you're going to need those batch of messages to represent the size and complexity of what you would expect in production. Because the idea here is that you're trying to establish these memory requirements before you get into production. So if you do have a problem, the problem won't be so critical. Once you've submitted that batch of messages the first time, you're going to see some memory growth there associated with processing that batch of messages. When you process that same batch of messages again, you're also going to see additional memory consumption. And you'll continue to see that as you process these batch of messages, and this is because of fragmentation of memory. We have more details available on that, I believe, online. Eventually, what you should see, in the absence of a memory leak, you should see the memory usage peak at some point. If you don't see a peak in the memory usage, then you need to stop and report the leak. First, you can investigate the leak by going through and trying to take out different pieces of that message flow to see where that memory leak may exist. And if you can't figure that out, then you want to open up a PMR with IBM. Now, at this point, you will have a message flow and a batch of messages that you can use to create the problem. Not to mention, your problem won't be so critical because you're not in production. If you did see a peak, then you just want to record that the results of that run, right? And then you remove the deploy children and go to the next message flow. And you'll go through that whole cycle again. So now to the next question.
Question number 7. We plan to migrate our message broker to a new Sun hardware. We are interested in if message broker performs better on, and then the customer goes on to list two particular Sun machines, and then ask what our recommendation is on that. IBM does not typically provide advice or recommend one vendor's hardware over another. So in this respect, we are unable to answer this question directly. However, there are a few things that we can talk about which are of interest. In the first instance, the customer can go through their IBM account team to TechLine, who provides sizing information. They may be able to assist the customer further in terms of sizing their requirements on these two particular hardware platforms. The second point that we can talk about is that there are differences between these two machines. They differ both in the processor speeds, and they differ in the number of processors. Within a message broker performance context, this has implications, as typically performance is CPU bound. If these platforms were AIX, then we would probably use something like ARPA, which is a relative performance factor between to machine specifications, and we could use this to compare one AIX machine to another. However, as I said in the first instance, IBM would not typically provide advice or recommend one vendor's product over another. So, although it's not directly answering the question, I hope at least the points that I have mentioned will provide some advice into how that customer should proceed with trying to determine which machine suits their requirements best. That concludes all the pre-submitted questions. I will now hand you back to the moderator, Joseph.
Thank you, Ian, and thank you to our panel of experts for answering the pre-submitted questions. At this point, Brad, we would like to open the lines for live Q&A period.
Our first question is from Troy Wells. Your line is open.
My question is really related to some of the SOAP nodes versus HTTP nodes, and the question is really geared around towards performance. As I understand, of course, the HTTP nodes utilize the BIP HTTP listener process that's running in AIX. And my question is also the SOAP nodes, such as the SOAP input and SOAP reply, do they have any form of relationship to that same process?
Okay, that's a good question. So there's two distinct differences between the SOAP nodes and the HTTP nodes that you've mentioned. So the HTTP nodes have a single listener, and if you look at the process list, the BIP HTTP listener, and that listener listens on a single port and serves this request for all HTTP input nodes in all execution groups. So they'll all share that same single listener. Now the SOAP nodes, which were brand new for version 6.1, actually, we embed a listener in each execution group. In fact, it is the code between the HTTP listener and the SOAP listener are very, very similar indeed. There's some overlap there, but the distinction is that for the SOAP nodes, the listener is embedded inside the execution group. Now, in terms of performance between the two, as Ian mentioned earlier, we do actually quote performance metrics for both types of nodes in the message broker performance reports. So you can refer to the performance reports to see the relative performance of those. Hopefully that answers your questions.
That did. Thank you.
We do have an additional response from Hakan Lan. Your line is open.
Hello there. My question is regarding how do you share HTTP load, no matter if it's SOAP input nodes or HTTP input nodes, over different brokers running on different machines?
In these cases, typically, there's a couple of different ways that you can do it. So for SOAP, where you've got multiple different listeners, you can choose to divide your clients up across the different listener ports which are being listened on. For HTTP, you've obviously got that single port, but there is actually a support pack, IE01, where you can run multiple instances of that listener. Again, you could split your clients across those different ports. Now, this isn't really ideal, having different sets of clients pointing at different ports, so quite often see customers using some form of HTTP load balancer, maybe the IBM, I think it's the IBM Edge server, something like that. So the clients would connect to that load balancer, and then that would fan the request across either multiple SOAP nodes or multiple HTTP listeners, which could be on one or more brokers. Hopefully that answers your question.
Yeah, sure. Thank you.
Our next question is from Marcus Sonderegger. Your line is open.
I'm coming back to the comparison of two different CPU architectures. I'm wondering, in a more general perspective, is it better to go with a machine which has less cores but which are having higher CPU frequency, or having a technology which has more cores but which are not so fast cycled?
It's a difficult question to answer. I would refer back to IP04, designing for performance. There is some comments around this. Going back to Ian's answer as well, you could, if you've got specific hardware in mind, you can go through TechLine. But generally, I think in my experience, it tends to be better to have fewer, faster CPUs, generally speaking.
Another question I have, is it worthwhile offloading heavy processing to WebSphere data power, or do you lose this advanced technology by transferring the message to data power, processing it, and getting it back into message brokers.
Right, that's a good question. Now, I think there are some key scenarios where it's useful to use data power, and if you're familiar with ISO 2, Message Broker Explorer support fact that we talked about earlier, there is actually an offload to data power capability there if you wish to use WS Security. So we mentioned some of the SOAP stuff earlier. So if you're interested in using some of the WS standards like WS Security, obviously that's quite heavyweight. So in those cases, it's quite useful to actually offload that capacity to data power. So your clients will connect through to data power, which will handle all the authentication and WS Security aspects, and then that will then feed through onto broker. So I think that kind of inline processing where it's handling WS Security on the way through to broker is a good use of data power. But there's another use case, which is a bit more fuzzy. So some people think about offloading XML processing, for example, and I find the case harder there. I think the benefits are less clear. That offloading in those cases would be beneficial. Certainly, there are well thought out cases, and I'd give the ISO 2 example offloading WS Security step how where it definitely is worth looking at.
Yeah, I do.
Thanks
a lot.
Our next question comes from Hakan Lang. Your line is open.
I have an additional question regarding 32 versus 64 bits of Windows operating system. Is there any benefits of running the broker on a 64-bit Windows operating system? As far as I know, you only have a 32-bit version of the broker, right?
Okay, so in terms of Windows, the 32-bit and 64-bit, so we do support Message Broker on 64-bit Windows platforms, but it's kind of toleration rather exploitation, so we don't actually have 64-bit execution groups available on Windows at the moment. There isn't really much to comment on there, so you're still restricted to 32-bit execution groups regardless of what the underlying Windows platform is, so we don't see much difference there at the moment.
And you have no possibility of running, for instance, one execution group in one part of a memory space and another execution group in another part of the memory space, for instance?
No.
I'm sorry for being ignorant about Windows.
No, it's up to the operating system how it allocates the memory for the execution groups, which are just OS processes at the end of the day. So we don't segment memory and assign processes to that memory. It's down to the operating system.
At this time, we've had no further responses for questions.
Thanks again for your participation. At this time, I would like to pass the presentation back to Rich for a summary of today's session.
Hello again, everyone. So hopefully you found the information that we've given you today useful. So just to recap, we've covered some useful performance information regarding IP04, designing for the performance support pack. Ian's touched upon ISO2, the Message Broker Explorer plugin for MQ Explorer. I mentioned the performance harness for GMS for driving load for your flows, and we've mentioned several times the performance reports for Message Broker, which we spend a long time writing, so we'd like people to use them. And if you do have any comments on those, there's a feedback section in the report. We'd be happy to hear your responses for that. We've also had some good information regarding ITCAM for SOA and its use for Message Broker, and how to look at the memory requirements of your message flows and to look for memory leaks. So it only remains for me to thank my fellow speakers for taking the time out to answer these questions, and also to thank all the people who've dialed into the call today for listening and asking the questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rich, for a great summary. At this time, we will conclude the open mic session.